Okay, everyone, we're going to start now. So the first speaker we have this morning is Anthony. All right, much hated and loved DPL, who has requested that we heckle as much as possible during his talk. So, off you go.
Okay, how about actual funny heckles rather than just boo? I've recently been talking to Gen 2 people and they were more intelligent. No, actually they were too busy gossiping about stuff, but whatever. So I'm AJ. You might have seen me from previous LTAs or Flame Wars on Debianlist. Apparently I've been DPL for 9 months now, although it feels quite a bit longer than that. And is Mike Beattie in the room? Yeah, unlike Mike, I haven't managed to get any grey hairs from the experience. Okay, so I'm going to just give a brief spiel about what's been happening in the last year or so, basically since the last LTA. Usually I manage to get out of this talk and get Vidal to give it instead, but I thought being DPL I probably couldn't do that this year. Excellent. One clap, one boo. We're so far going level. Okay, so rather than actually going through all the stuff that we've done, I thought I'd just select a few things that invoked really large flame wars instead and figured that'd take up enough time. When I was planning the talk, I had about 7 down, but I've had to trim that to 5 because I'm just not going to have enough time. Not everything actually was a controversy. We had a couple of new mini-comps in Colombia and Venezuela that went off without a hitch, as far as I know, which is good. Have you heard of Zonga Linux? That's the cool government-supported Linux that's based on Debian, that's basically translated because Microsoft couldn't manage to get the translations right. We've had our first Summer of Code experience this year, which went fairly well. We got about half the projects finished up to scratch and so forth, and they'll be included in Lenny. Okay, but controversies. Who's heard of Vancouver? Who's heard of Vancouver in the Debian context? Okay, who hasn't? So in 2005, the release team and the FTP masters and basically the cabal had a meeting in Vancouver in Canada. And we decided, we went through it and asked ourselves, well, what can we do to not take 2.5 years to release? And one of the things that we came up with as one of the major problems was that architectures just... Oh dear. Hello? Sorry? Hello? Yes. Okay. You're going around in half an hour. Are you ready to go? So that's my movers, who are moving me today in Brisbane. Do you have my mum's number still?
Yep.
Can you give her a call and tell her that that's happening? Unfortunately, there's not going to be any fights, I hope, so it won't meet the DevConf standards. Yep. Yeah, can you just give her a call and tell her that the movers are ready?
Okay, I'm ready to watch.
In about an hour, I can leave.
Okay,
Vancouver, yeah. So unfortunately, I was meant to be moving on Thursday before I came here, but then our settlement got all confused and we couldn't move then, so it got put back to Monday, but we didn't give them the new phone number to call, so they were calling me to move in Brisbane, so I have to contact someone who's going to be able to open the door up there and whatever. And that was meant to happen around lunchtime, not around now, but hey. How? And will you send someone? Not how can I possibly trust you? Although, okay, so we had the meeting and decided that they're not keeping up with GCC and tool chain problems, and so you'd have glibc not working, or you'd have GCC not working for months on end on particular architectures, and we just couldn't fix problems if the compiler's not working. So we decided basically that we were going to say, if you can't keep up to standard with your architecture, we're just not going to support it for release. And that had a bit of a flame war and kind of lasted for a couple of months with people getting upset and no one quitting as far as I know though. Have to work on that. Sorry? Yes, but not on the architecture one. We've been working on that in other areas. And so the flame war from that kind of was a little bit heated, and I guess till about August or so. Excellent. And so until about August or so, the release managers just kind of, we're not going to worry about that. We'll just hope everything works out and whatever. But eventually we got a requalification plan working, and we talked to the M68K and other porters and stuff in Helsinki at DevCops, and we kind of got somewhere with that, and so we had a plan for that. And in about on about the 30th of December 2005, so just over a year ago, we had an architecture qualification thing, which was going to let us work out how to add new architectures and what they've got to do to actually be in the distribution. So the problem there was that our archive size was getting up to 100 gigabytes or so, and we thought that was too big to just be mirroring everywhere. It's now 200 gig or so, but whatever. And so we were really reluctant to let multiple SH variants in, MIPS64, different S390 architectures, and so we just said no to everything, and that included AMD64. How many people run Debian on AMD64 now? So 30th December 2005, we decided this is what standards architectures have to meet to be included in the Debian archive at all. On 14th of January last year, we had pretty much a plan on how this was all going to be implemented and get the mirror split into IP86 only pretty much and everything. By the end of February, we had that underway. By the 16th of March, we had the first AMD64 binary uploaded. By the 19th of April, we had AMD64 and Etch. How many people run AMD64 and Etch? Yeah. By end of May, we had AMD64 and Etch to bootstrappable, so you could do an install, although it didn't work all that well. And by mid-July, we had AMD64 officially as part of Etch. And then pretty much nothing happened for 6 months until, And then 8th of August, we had M68K provisionally dropped because they just couldn't manage to keep up. On the 28th of September, it was officially dropped. And then in, I think, mid-November, the M68K guys started to do their auto building on an emulated machine running on, I think, AMD64 or a distributed box of some description. And suddenly the graph of build stuff went like that. And so after all this effort to drop one architecture, we'll probably be including it again in Lenny. On the upside, all the architectures are staying really good for that's what we're releasing soon, isn't it? So we have some graphs. Has anyone got internet access here? If you go to buildd.debian.org statistics, then there's some graphs there. You'll see in the quarter graphs and the weekly graphs that they're all mainly staying in the 95, 97, 98% built and up-to-date region. For Sarge, that was regularly dropping down for all sorts of architectures. Pretty much the only ones that didn't affect were i386 and PowerPC. But for pretty much the entirety of Etch, we've kept all those architectures up fairly high, so we've only had to worry about fixing the bugs, not fixing tool chain problems to get bugs in other packages fixed. And that's worked a lot better. So we've had some progress on that. The other thing with M68K is that until it is back in testing and we're all confident about it, we're planning on giving it its own suite so that it'll have a kind of release with Etch, although it won't be official in the usual sense. And the other thing with, does anyone care about M68K before I say the following part? No, go on, be honest, stick your hand up if you care about M68K. Not if you use it, just if you care about it. I don't really want to make everyone exercise. So back in January last year, so 12 months ago, Wuta posted about supporting ColdFire. That hasn't actually happened yet. It's a different variation on M68K chips with a slightly different ABI. Unfortunately, it's slightly more limited, so all the current M68K stuff uses some opcodes that won't actually work right on the ColdFire. But if we do the ABI in the appropriate way, which I think is going to involve just having some exception handling for those instructions, then we can run on ColdFire chips as well as the regular M68K stuff, and ColdFire chips are actually modern and run reasonably fast. So as well as having the emulator build this stuff to actually work right, we might have some M68K machines that are fast enough to actually be useful. Okay, who's heard of the GFDL? Who's heard of the GSFDL? Okay, who remembers what Debian's problems with the GFDL are or were? Who doesn't? Okay, so the GFDL is the GNU Free Documentation License. It's what GNU recommends for documentation instead of using the GFDL or whatever. It's what Wikipedia uses for all their stuff. There were a few problems with it. One of the major ones was it has provision for unmodifiable sections, invariant sections, I think they call them. So that means that if you have an Emacs manual or a GCC manual, Richard Stallman can put his text on why free software is good or how to make money off free software in it, and no one can change that. It's got to be the exact words that Richard Stallman put in there forevermore. And I mean, that's fair enough. Some of Richard Stallman's texts are quite interesting, and at the very least in a historical way to kind of indicate this is how free software started in the 80s or the early 90s or whatever. But having a text that can be quite long, that you can't remove, that you can't modify, you can't really even translate it sometimes, a lot of Debian people didn't really think that was free enough. And beyond that, there were other kind of bugs in the license, so that if you read it kind of literally, you couldn't put a GFDL document on a file system that supported permissions, because that would kind of be a technological measure for preventing access, which, I mean, fair enough that we don't like, that we do, well, I mean, isn't that a technological measure for preventing access in itself? Fair enough that we don't like DRM and that we want to be able to get it, like, if you put it on a DVD, then we want to be able to take it off and reuse it elsewhere and stuff. But so it's not necessarily a problem in principle, it's just more of a problem in wording. And we'd passed that on when we passed on those sort of concerns when the draft was put out. I don't even want to think about what year that was, but a while ago. And it basically just escalated into a flame war and whatever. So back in January last year, we decided, okay, well, obviously the Free Software Foundation's not going to ever do anything about this, so let's decide whether we're going to drop it or keep it or whatever. And we decided, after some votes that took most of January and February, to say, okay, invariant sections, they're definitely no good. If we've got a document that's GFDL that has no invariant sections, that's fine. We're not going to worry about these little bugs. We'll just ignore that. And so 11th of March, 369 developers decided basically that those trivial sort of things, they're going to be okay, the unmodifiable sections aren't, and all the people on legal who like reading things very literally decided that that was defining pi to be 3. And I believe you can get a t-shirt saying that on Cafe Press now. I think the funding from that goes straight to Matthew Garrett, not to Debian, but either way. Now, that was pretty much it from Debian's perspective. We've decided, okay, we'll keep these GFDL stuff, we'll put the rest of it in non-free, whatever, we're done. Until 25th September, we get a new discussion draft of the GFDL and a new license called the GSFDL, published by, or discussion drafts of those published by the Free Software Foundation. So the draft of the GFDL seemed to just fix the bugs, basically. Better handling of DRM stuff, better handling of a few other things that, frankly, I don't really care that much about. Go away. Whereas the simplified one actually doesn't have the problem with the invariant sections either. So the simplified one is basically exactly what we wanted. The only problem is that stuff that's already licensed under the GFDL doesn't kind of automatically go on to this GSFDL. So if you're writing documentation stuff, feel free to use the GSFDL. That's great. Debian loves it. I mean, even the legal people can't find anything to complain about. And by the laughter, you can tell that's a pretty good achievement. And GFDL stuff will generally be version 2.2 or later, so it'll generally automatically upgrade to the latest version. And as long as you don't actually include any invariant stuff, that's brilliant too. So after however many years, we've not only got a position statement from Debian on it, and like a decision, but we've even got the Free Software Foundation kind of coming along on board on what we wanted to, and we have almost like agreement. I don't know, I'm astounded by it. I screwed up my segue there because I don't really think I can segue from agreement to Sun Java, but... Sun Java, who's heard of Java before? Who hasn't? You lucky people. Okay. So back in May, during DevConf in Mexico, some decided that they were going to announce their release of the DLJ, the Operating System Distributor License for Java. Originally, that was going to be called the Java Operating System Distributors License. You can do a Google for JODL, which was going to be the acronym, and you'll see why they changed it. So they basically provided some advance notice to Debian and Ubuntu about this, and so we had a couple of revisions of their license text to make sure that it was something suitable for us. And when the announcement went out, it was included in non-free and in multiverse or something for both Debian and Ubuntu respectively. So that was on the 17th of May. Also on the 17th of May, there were concerns about the license raised on Dash Legal. On the 19th of May, Sun responded to some of those questions. On about the 19th of May, Dash Legal responded, yeah, but you keep saying that's not an official response and it doesn't overcome the license, so we're going to ignore everything you just said. Going a little bit later, 5th of June, we had an actual official Sun clarification that in theory met most of the problem. On the 6th of June, John Gerzen, who was the president of SPI at the time, who's heard of SPI? Who doesn't know what SPI is? SPI is a charitable organization in the States, of which Vidal over here in the hypercolor shirt is president of, that basically handles donations for Debian, for PostgreSQL, for freedesktop.org, and potentially a few others. Anyway, John was worried about, well, this is the FTP masters accepting this essentially contract on behalf of SPI, and they haven't had any review, and are they obligating the SPI directors so that Sun can take their homes or something like that? That was the 6th of June. On the 7th of June, Debian splitting from SPI hits the Slashdot front page, submitted by an anonymous coward. If anyone knows who that person is, great to hear. So let's see, that was the 7th of June. On the 8th of June, John actually contacted the SPI lawyer about this and tried to get some definitive responses and stuff. And hence, on the 9th of June, the thread on Dash Legal pretty much dies, pretty much for good. But that was actually without actually getting any legal advice yet. So 1st of August, the SPI board changes over. We have elections, and Bidel became president, and Dom decided not to run again. And so I basically sent an email to the new board reiterating the request for kind of advice from the SPI lawyer on what's going on. Nothing much happens then for a little while until 20th of October or so, when Java gets GPL'd. Technically, it's not entirely GPL'd, like the stuff we distribute in non-free is not GPL'd. It's a different JVM that's getting GPL'd, and I think was a week or so ago, but wasn't actually in October, and there's some class path libraries and stuff that have actually been GPL'd right from October, and they're getting included in the GNU class path or whatever. It's all details, and essentially it means that the JVM that you want to use is actually still non-free, but hopefully we'll get to see it become free maybe this year, who knows. And yeah, we still don't actually have an answer on the non-free license that we were trying to get an opinion on from the lawyer. And around about on the 12th of January this year, so a few days ago, we've decided to close that issue and decide that it's all okay without really having all that much advice from him. So we've got about 5 days in there, about 3 weeks in there, where we've actually had a huge flame war. We've decided we'll go get a legal opinion on this. Flame war dies. We don't end up actually getting a legal opinion on it, but Java's GPL'd in the meantime, kind of, so it's all good. So if you want to know how Debian works, that's how Debian works. My next heading is Dunk Tank, but I can't think what that could possibly be about, so I'll skip that. Actually, we've got a talk on that later, so most of the technical stuff we'll talk about then, and hopefully Ted will be helping me talk about that, but I haven't actually managed to read my mail to see whether he said, oh my god, you submitted me to a talk, no. Excellent, I'm the same. Okay. Who noticed the recall vote as part of that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sorry, there's a video, isn't there? kids, just ignore that. The Dunk Tank thing was raised in was, well, first of all, I spoke to the release managers about it in like early September, late August, something like that, just to see if they'd be free or available or whatever, because there's no point doing it if they've got commitments for work or whatever. And slightly after that, spoke to the release assistants and the stable release managers to see if they'd have any major problem with it, and they didn't seem to. And so a little while after that, mentioned it to SPI because it was probably going to go through their funds, and slightly after that mentioned it on Debian Private. I ended up forwarding the mail thread of that onto SPI so that the non-Debian members of the SPI board could read it if they wanted to. They didn't actually end up reading it, but whatever. And it was a multi-megabyte thread, I think even gzipped. So that went on for a month or so, and I don't know, it was dead in flame wars, so I guess it wasn't that bad. I don't think anyone quit while it was on private. Oh yes, they did, Matthew Garrett quit. He resigned properly, but, well, I don't know, he works on Ubuntu and that's kind of Debian, right? Oh, crap. Oh, that's neat. Matthew Garrett in New Zealand made a written promise to run for DPL this year. Now he's quit as a developer and can't run. He does. I guess if we can't get the votes to modify the constitution, he probably won't be DPL anyway. So. Sorry? Matthew Garrett lied?
No. We can't
can't become a maintainer in time to run. Therefore, his taking last year was awesome.
I'm going to completely ignore that.
He never came drunk.
Lucky Garrett's not in the room, right? Oh, well, no, I could just point him out to the people who don't know him. He's here. He's giving a talk later. You can... No, I'm not about to say anything at all. Apart from the rest of my talk or something, right. So, yeah, we had huge arguments on private. Eventually, Matthew Garrett, if you might have seen the news stories, decided, or at that point, there was a straw that broke a camel's back or something, and he decided to quit, basically, because it was all just too unfriendly and histrionical or whatever. And on private, it basically, there was a fair amount of support saying, oh, yeah, this is a good idea. We'll release and we'll actually show that we're committed to it, and hell, why not? It's something new, but oh my God, there's going to be a huge blame war. You know that, right? No, I don't know that. It took probably a good 24 hours between all those supportive remarks for the first kind of droplets of, oh my God, you are not serious. You are not doing this, sort of mails to start. And that was pretty much the next month. As you can probably, who doesn't know what I'm talking about, by the way, what Dunk Tank is? Okay, well, Liz's got a couple of people. So Dunk Tank is the stupid name of the project to collect some donations that will then have paid basically Steve Langoshek and Andy Bath to do release management work full time for December and October last year. And the idea was, well, that we're trying to release on December 4th last year. Obviously, that didn't happen. We're going to have some problems, obviously, but if we have the release managers working, at least the problems won't be that we don't have enough attention paid to release management. And so the first thought was going to be just use some of the like 70 grand that SPI has in Debian's name to pay them, because we're only going to pay them 6 grand each. And okay, people didn't like that idea, so okay, we'll ask for donations instead. So we got 12 grand of donations, and okay, we'll go ahead with this, and please work full time. And okay, at the moment we're still collecting donations, so we haven't technically paid Steve and Andy the amount that we were going to yet, but hey, we're working on it. And basically the idea is release management full time. It's going to be the worst part of release management is going to be just before we release, so we'll make that easy for everyone. And obviously there were huge blame wars, so one person tried to quit. We also had a recall vote of me as DPL, and we had at least one opinion statement on the Dunk Tank project on Devel announced by a bunch of people who didn't like it for various reasons. And multiple, everyone knows what Debian Weekly News is, right? It's now Debian Monthly News, because the guy who edits Debian Weekly News doesn't really feel motivated enough to dedicate basically a day a week to it. Okay. So, paying people in free software is kind of a complicated issue, especially when some people get paid, some people don't. So that was kind of the idea behind contacting the release assistants and the other people who were doing pretty much the exact same job who weren't going to get any money, and checking that they were okay with it. And they mostly were pretty happy with it. So they had regular jobs that they couldn't really leave. And basically, yeah, good on Steve and Andy. This will actually probably help quite a lot. It's going to be a tough couple of months. And yeah, we're happy enough with it. I mean, obviously there are potential problems and we'll want to think about this before doing it again or whatever. But we'll go ahead with it. Other people, particularly Joey, was unhappy with it because he's had bad experiences with paying people in one of the German Linux conferences, which I think is Linux Congress. the next tag. Oh, well, I had a 50-50 chance. And basically just not feeling that people get treated fairly when there's payments involved. So if I'm saying, well, you'll do it my way or else maybe you won't be employed next month, that kind of isn't really what free software is about or isn't really what Debian's about as a volunteer organisation. It's kind of all the crap parts of business. But on the other hand, actually having people work full-time on the release is a good thing. And at least for this past thing, we kind of avoided the you'll do it my way or you won't get paid by saying, Steve and Eddie, you're getting paid as long as you just do release work. However you do the release work, that's fine. Steve ended up doing his from a pub with wireless, I think. And I'm pretty sure that the only major problem that Steve didn't get fixed was X support on Alpha, which is still outstanding as I understand it. It works? X on Alpha works? That's awesome. We still have the kernel and the kernel so that we can get DIRC2 out and iSweezel, which is an excellent segue to my next point, if I have time. Yeah, I kind of do. So who's heard of iSweezel? Who hasn't heard of iSweezel? Ted, you're lying. iSweezel, you haven't heard of iSweezel? Firefox, iSweezel. Trademark.
Oh, iSweezel, sorry.
Okay. oh, iSweezel, yeah, I remember. No, not GNU iSweezel. Okay, so Firefox, everyone's used Firefox, right? Because they took out an ad in some paper sometime. And it runs on Windows, it's great. So Mozilla Firefox, yay, web browser, whatever. As is common with lots of packages, Debian and Ubuntu and all the Debian derivatives have their own patches and do security support for it slightly differently than Upstream does and whatever else. And for a fair while we had an informal agreement that that was okay and we weren't allowed to use the Firefox logo because we were distributing something slightly different, but that was all okay. We'd just call it Firefox, have a different logo, make sure that it works because, hey, we don't want to break it either. And fine. Yes. So the licenses for the logo, the trademark and copyright license, are basically just you don't use this unless it's the official Firefox thing. You've got to have it in particular proportions. You've got to have it on particular backgrounds. Blah, blah, blah. Make sure that it's a nice logo and that it kind of fits their branding scheme. So there's instructions on how you can use it on t-shirts and stuff, but they're very specific instructions that are nowhere near free. And I think they've got a fact about this, so you can read up basically their explanation of why they don't want to give it a GPL license or GSDL or whatever. And yeah, it's a non-free icon, so we didn't really want to include it in main, so that's the other reason we had the different icon. Now, there was then a new person appointed to manage the trademarks and stuff and get it all more formalized, and they then contacted Debian and there was a nice long argument that gradually escalated into, you'll do it this way, you won't do it that way, I can't do it that way, you will do it this way or else, oh crap. And that managed to happen just before EDF's release date, so it was kind of a screw up in everyone in all directions. Okay, so basically the debate on the bug log was kind of the sort of thing that neither Mozilla nor Debian had kind of backed down from. So on the Mozilla side, we now have a fairly definitive kind of trademark license, and this is how Linux distributors will have to do it, and that's why we've now got the Fedora, Ubuntu, whatever, cabal, having the distro meeting with Mozilla guys a month ago. I'm not quite sure how long ago at this point. On working out how Firefox under Linux is going to be packaged and distributed and supported for security and whatever else. On the other hand, Debian was kind of annoyed at how Mozilla were acting too, so they didn't really, we didn't really want to compromise it all either there. So not Firefox's trademark, the logo's trademark, we can't use one without the other. We're not going to call it Firefox anymore, so instead we're going to call it iSweezel. Obviously, I don't know. iSweezel's been the alternative name for some time now. I don't know why. I don't really care. I think it's a crap band, but hey, who cares? So iSweezel has a... You're going to tell me it's just about time, right?
Yeah,
5 minutes. iSweezel has a pretty little logo of essentially a weasel humping the globe. Even better, there's an animated version. and of course, Thunderbird's in the same sort of category. It's by Mozilla, so it's now iStars, and there's also iSape, and there's ice something else as well. Ice what? No, it's not iWM. That's not a Mozilla product. Yeah, and we've got some other really crap logos that aren't a weasel humping the globe at all, and they're even less comprehensible. So I don't know what. Interesting concept. Maybe we should have invariant logos that can't be animated under any circumstances. obviously we've kind of got a detente now. So Debian's trying to get iSweezel in shape and changing all the Firefox strings to iSweezel and getting plugins in a different location. And finding that's not working because we're trying to have a symlink here where we used to have a directory, and we're not going to hard code the directory name where it searches because that would involve the word Mozilla, and that's kind of a trademark too, and blah, blah, blah. And at the moment, I think we still don't actually have iSweezel in Edge, so we still have Firefox in there, and iSweezel's got release critical bugs because of these plugin directories and because of other reasons. And so not only do we not have it in Etch, we kind of need to get it into Etch, and we're basically developing an entire new brand for the web browser in kind of, well, a week or two before we were meant to release. Yeah. I'm not sure it's fair to say that Debian and Sun cooperate more than that. I'm not sure that's a good thing. I mean, ideally it would be Debian and Sun cooperate, Debian and Mozilla cooperate, Debian and Ubuntu cooperate, and then we're off in fairyland, right? Yeah, we're not talking about Teletubbies, and I didn't hear what that was. What was that? Yes, that's right. iStub is in Etch already and has been for a little while now. iSweezel, I'm not sure if people use iStub or something. It doesn't seem to have had the huge amount of bugs and stuff I would have expected. Yeah. That was fudge up bugs for the kids at home. So apart from having everyone cooperate and get on nicely and whatever else all the time, the kind of technical problem here is that we don't really have a good way of handling trademarks. Who knows what the trademark or the logo licenses for Debian are? I'll give you two words, non-free. So the open use logo, the little swirl thing, which I don't think is on any t-shirts here, just kind of, oh, is it? No, that's the Debian Women logo. That's the Mexican logo. Anyone got a Debian? Oh, there we go. Yeah, that one. Yeah, no one can see that. So that logo is, anyone can use it as long as it refers to Debian, which as a copyright license, which is what it is non-free. So the open use logo, the official use logo, which is the one with the bottle and the more regular swirl, is you can use it with Debian's permission and that's it. So neither of those are remotely free. So what we've kind of been thinking about doing is having a proper trademark license for this. Yeah, about 2 minutes. So that we have a copyright license on the actual image, BSD, GPL, whatever, and you can do what you want with it. If you want to make your Debian Women logo with a little women thingy, then you can do that. You can take the file, you can modify it, whatever. If you want to make a little kind of swirly icon for your completely unrelated thing and color it blue, you can take our image, BSD license, whatever. If it's not remotely related to Debian, it doesn't look like it's related to Debian, trademark doesn't come into it, so that's all fine, that's completely free. But we then are considering using the trademark law to actually say, okay, the Debian logo is a trademark, so if you're going to use it in ways that are confusing with actual Debian, so you want to call it DB1AN or something and have it be a distribution of Lignix with, who's heard of Lignix? That was what GNU Linux was originally going to be called before Richard got a little bit of sense. And have a distribution with kind of spyware and malware and whatever else in it and try and confuse people to say, oh yeah, I'm giving you a Debian CD, really? Then that's kind of violating the trademark and not okay. And that's somewhat more limited than copyright because you still can make dry things as long as they're not confusing. Copyright is always applicable. It's applicable to everyone kind of all the time in all countries. Trademarks are much more specific, so they only work where they're registered or where they're enforced and only work in the same kind of subject domain and if it's actually confusing. If it's not confusing, trademarks are pretty much fine. So what we're thinking and what we have a proposal on if you search on wiki.debian.org for trademark, is the idea is have free licenses for these logos, so BSD for the swirl and GPL for the bottle and swirl. Don't have any trademark enforcement whatsoever on the open use logo, so anyone can do whatever with the swirl that they like, including being confusing with it or whatever. As long as we can keep using it for ourselves, we're going to be happy with that and just basically see what happens and hope that kind of the whole free software thing, sure, you can take a copy of Linux and insert malware into it and people might buy it off you once, but they'll never talk to you again. So we're kind of thinking of relying on more social sort of enforcement just for the open use logo and reserving a regular trademark for the official use logo. Unfortunately, Brandon and I seem to be the only people who actually comment on that. So I don't know, what do people think of it, or do you just not understand it at all?
Good
idea. Okay.
What
you stand up and do a little twirl. Organise a depackage boss for the weekend just gone. That's one of our depackage maintainers, by the way. Angus, would you just point him out? Yeah, there we go. Depackage maintainer.
I think that the official piece of logo only needs to be more known for the world and less crap. Well, we're going to say that.
It'd be nice, but all right. I think I'm being kicked off stage. Thanks very much.